This meeting of the House Resources Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:04 p.m. Wednesday, February 18, 2026, in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Fields, Representative Colom, Representative Hall, Representative Mears, Co-Chair Representative Dibert, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Freer. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Thank you. I'd like to thank Cheryl Cole from Records and Renzo Moises from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. Today in House Resources, we are hearing a presentation from the mayors of the North Slope Borough, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough on the impacts of AKLNG project would have in their communities. And then, time allowing, we'll take House Bill 271 relating to the royalties in the kitchen lights unit of Cook Inlet back up. Let the record reflect we were joined by Representatives Elims and Sadler, and in the audience we also have Representative Ruffridge and I think that's it. So first up, we'll hear from Mayor Josiah Putkatuk of the North Slope Borough. Mayor Putkatuk, welcome back to House Resources. Please take the table and begin your presentation.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair Dibert, Chair Nail, committee members. Good to be back in the building. I can tell you that your guys' chairs are a lot more comfortable than everybody else's chairs, and that was apparent to me when I was sitting in the gallery for an hour earlier. Again, thank you for calling the meeting. Thank you for your service to the state of Alaska. I know personally, from my experience, that it is not an easy task to undertake to be a member of the legislature, so I want to show my appreciation for your willingness to continue to do that. As part of your responsibilities, you have the responsibility to make sure you exercise due diligence over the dealings of the state and how that impacts the different municipalities. So I want to acknowledge your efforts in making sure that there's due diligence occurring with the dealings of the state and specifically to the Alaska AKLNG project. Before we dive into, I guess, the North Slope Borough's experience and opinion regarding the AKLNG project, I think it's important to talk about a little bit of the history of the North Slope Borough. I think between the borough mayors that you have represented here, there is a wide variety of uniqueness between the three boroughs and any other boroughs in the state. But specifically to the North Slope, we have a long challenged existence of the North Slope Borough. And when I mean long challenged, I go back to the formal discovery of oil in the Arctic with the Prudhoe Bay find in 68 and the preceding sale of the leases in 69 that generated roughly $900 million for the state of Alaska, and very little of which was invested back into the district in which the revenue was generated from. It'd be a stretch to say none, because I think there was a little bit, but very little of which. And so with that experience, as we went to Congress to formalize the final negotiations and dealings of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of December 18, 1971, simultaneously, I was just refreshing my memory. It was about December 4, so a couple weeks prior, we were formalizing the petition to the Land and Boundaries Commission to organize the North Slope Borough. And essentially, it was the fact that we were going to get a deal from the federal government in regards to our rights to the land and rights to our resources, specific to the North Slope, which is just a little bigger than the size of Utah. And we were met with headwinds, both political and other, in our formation for our rights, and there were some challenges and decisions that we had to make as the borough, as the residents of the North Slope Borough, a lot of which dealt with the responsibility for service delivery to our residents. And with that responsibility came the opportunity for levying property tax on anything within our jurisdiction, both under Alaska Statute 4356 and Alaska Statute 2945. And so we made that conscious decision to have the demand fall on the North Slope Borough for services with the recognition that with that demand will come the revenues associated to provide those services. A long history of court cases between communities within the North Slope and the North Slope itself as an entity, both with industry taxpayers, the state of Alaska itself, where we've had some challenges over the years. Seems like every decade or so, we have to kind of tell our story as far as the unseen demand on state services that the North Slope Borough provides to the residents. Some things out of my responsibilities from day-to-day operations on the North Slope is we run our own search and rescue department. A lot of the times the State of Alaska Search and Rescue Division, in helping the Northwest Arctic Borough and other jurisdictions south of the Brooks Range, requires the North Slope Borough assist in different search efforts, and so we're proud to lend that capability back to the State of Alaska and other adjacent jurisdictions. We don't take any funding from Village Safe Water efforts that I'm sure you guys and other committee responsibilities have the opportunity to legislate funding for. We do all of our water treatment, wastewater treatment, and delivery of water services under our own authorities and revenues. We take very little, if any, from the power cost equalization. We do all of that in-house within the borough, where we are recognized as the utility for six of our eight communities, six of which are also reliant on diesel power. The other two communities, Nuiqsut and Barrow, have natural gas. Barrow has natural gas from the Navy days in the 40s, and Nuiqsut most recently has natural gas from the Alpine development, which leases sold for Alpine in the 90s, developed, and then it wasn't until about 2006 that the community was able to benefit from the natural gas near their community. And those are the kind of specifics that we put together in different projects, is to make sure that either on one end we have the ability through levying taxes to provide the services to the community, or on the other end, direct benefits from the development into our communities. And that's something that's never going to change, never has changed. And it boils down to the story that we always hear from our founding fathers of the North Slope Borough and the ANCSA negotiations, and it's that it sure is nice to wake up in the morning to a warm home and not having to thaw out the ice in the wash bin to wash your hands and brush your teeth in the morning. One of our elders would joke, the recent Oliver Levitt, that I didn't like school necessarily, but it was the only warm place in town that early in the morning, so we went to school. I went to school for other reasons, and I missed school for other reasons growing up in my childhood. So, again, I want to thank you all for the due diligence regarding the dealings of the state. The North Slope Borough serves as a willing partner, like we always have, for resource development in our backyard. We have a responsibility, fiduciary responsibility, to the residents of the borough to make sure that the culture and hunting traditions of our people remain intact. That's part of the reason that when we formed the North Slope Borough, we established everything as a conservation district so that it had to go through the appeal process to become an industrial district, to make sure that any project specific had the checks and balances in place to look after the ecology and more so the ability for our people to hunt the same lands and waters that we've hunted for millennia. That's the first pillar. Second pillar, obviously, is the economic viability of our communities. You all are aware of the significant challenges that rural Alaska faces, and it's real simple for everybody that knows. If Alaska Airlines flies it to your community, you pay just a little bit more than Anchorage. But if Alaska Airlines doesn't fly to your community and it's one of the smaller freight carriers, then you pay even more. And so the North Slope is no different from that. Alaska Airlines flies to Prudhoe and Barrow, which is our residential hub. And the rest of our communities are served either by seasonal barge or air transport of goods and products. So that's the second pillar, maintain the economic viability of our communities. And I think the third, which is kind of an offshoot of the economic viability, is that look for opportunities for development projects to directly benefit our communities. I give the example of the natural gas from Alpine into Nuiqsut, which changed their monthly fuel rate at the time. If I remember right, I researched it the last time I had to sit in this chair, and it was when we were pushing the Willow Project resolution. But if I remember right, it in 2006, it changed their monthly fuel bill from $300 a month to about $100 a month, which obviously gives you more resources to do other things within your community. So that's the other offshoot. We look for opportunities to create win-win-win situations, no matter what development project comes to our backyard. And when it comes to, you know, the cultural subsistence traditional aspect with whaling, that kind of holds the top priority. So you've seen the North Slope Borough participate in different public comments regarding anything offshore as a significant threat to the North Slope Borough, and we would much rather work with industry and regulatory agencies on finding good wins on onshore development. And so that's been the theme of the borough. We have a strong recognition of the need for the balance of development and economy and ecology and the lands and waters that we rely on. So in regards to the subject at hand with the AKLNG project, we maintain a positive outlook for the opportunities that it means to the rest of the state of Alaska, the nation. We recognize, as we always had, that oil has been a discussion of being able to domineer at the national level, and now gas is becoming that discussion to make sure that we have domestic production and reliance of natural gas, and we recognize and find value in being able to help provide that for our nation. I don't know the economics of the cost of gas delivered along the pipeline to the rest of the boroughs. Maybe they'll speak to that. But we recognize that there's a potential for value for affordable gas and energy to the rest of the state of Alaska, the rail belt included. Formerly having sat across where you're sitting, Neil, recognize the challenges ahead with the Cook Inlet, and knowing that the North Slope Point Thompson natural gas can be a potential pressure relief valve for that headwind that the lower Alaska areas, South Central, are facing. So we continue our discussions with not only the state of Alaska, but the project owner, Glenfarne. We've most recently, since about Christmas break, have begun discussions to discuss any kind of concessions that may be required to make the project go forward. And all of that is still under deliberation as far as the trade-offs that are required to make something happen. But also looking after the pillars that I spoke to earlier as far as either needing the resource to provide the service to my residents or having a direct benefit from a project by way of natural gas to any of our communities. So we're continuing to have those discussions. We look forward to kind of a positive outlook on what that deal overall can look like, and we continue to learn more about the project in our weekly meetings with different stakeholders. So look forward to that ongoing discussion. I know you're half your job is managing the hour slot that you've given us with the other folks here to speak, and this is probably the most short-winded I've been my whole tenure as mayor, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Putkaduk. I wanted to just open it up to the committee, and also want to let the record reflect that we were joined by Representative Prox at 108, and so before we invite the other mayors, I also want to recognize that we have Mayor Chris Knoll with the Denali Borough here as well. I didn't see any other mayors. Are there any questions for Mayor Putkaduk or any comments? All right. Seeing and hearing none, clean up book.
Clean up.
Co-chair Dybert, if you'd like to introduce your mayor.
Absolutely. Thank you, Co-Chair Freer. I have the honor to introduce the mayor from Fairbanks North Star Borough, my community. If Mayor Grier Hopkins can come forward. He may look familiar. He is a former representative from 2019 to 2023 and has been serving as our mayor in Fairbanks since 2024. And doing a great job leading our community. And when he's not doing this job, he's chasing around his four-year-old daughter, Isadora, and being a dad and balancing his work. Welcome. Please come forward and share your story with us. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you, as Mayor Putkaduk said, for having us here to understand the impacts of the gas line discussion, the municipal property tax discussion, as it falls on the shoulders of the different municipalities along the route. Sitting in those seats, I remember it's oftentimes easy to get a myopic view of the impacts and the discussion that happened here. So appreciate you branching out and wanting to hear from us. It does make a difference as we work on our efforts and our helping our communities back home too. You know, us in the Fairbanks North Star Borough has had a long relationship with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline that runs a long way through our community. And utilizing the 20 mil tax rate there and negotiating different assessed value rates with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. In this project, as Mayor Pocketock said, we've been meeting with AGDC Director and Mr. Craig Richards as well almost weekly for this calendar year in discussions about what opportunities for a different tax structure might work and what that might look like. And those have been going well. Those conversations they're going okay. We haven't come to an agreement yet, and there was some hope for a fast bill to come out of that discussion, all in agreement. But, you know, us as municipalities don't have a lot of resources to be able to understand the full impacts of what those different numbers might be and what those different levers are. But we've been working hard to try to understand what's being put on the table from AGDC. But, you know, as we look at the scale of this project and what it might mean for Alaska, and something that we all strongly support, we all want the gas line to happen, especially as I look at the energy costs of my community back home in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We've had, you know, substantial growth in the natural gas market in Fairbanks since the Interior Gas Utility was created back in 2015. We've actually more than tripled our meter hookups. That number is still just over 3,000 now. So it's not a huge number of the overall community, but it is substantially growing. And honestly, the biggest obstacle from that comes from where the lines are and how much the gas costs. Is it actually more affordable to change over from diesel to natural gas? And much of the time, it's actually not. It's more expensive when we're getting natural gas at $24, $25, $26 per MCF at the person's home. Per MMBTU, it's more expensive to switch to natural gas to heat your home. But it's cleaner, it's more consistently priced also. And it's something we're trying to expand. Just recently, for the first time ever, the Interior Gas Utility and our community was able to commercialize North Slope natural gas for the first time ever in an agreement with Hillcorp that allows us to truck gas from the North Slope down to Fairbanks. That's how we've always got our gas. It used to be trucked up from Big Lake through the NSTAR infrastructure up to Fairbanks, but just recently we had a ribbon cutting to bring the first truck to Fairbanks. It was a big deal for us. So our concern at Fairbanks at this point with the contract that we have is not necessarily more gas. It is what is the price of that gas that's going to get to us in Fairbanks, in the whole borough, because it's North Pole, Badger area, and the city of Fairbanks has a fair bit of infrastructure build out. But much of our community won't ever get natural gas. It's just too far out. They won't get plumbing, and they won't get natural gas either. But much of us have the opportunity to grow onto it. So in these discussions, how do we get more affordable gas to our community and to the rest of the state? And that's the biggest question that I've been weighing in these conversations because, in all honesty, the AKLNG route goes 2 miles through the Fairbanks North Star Borough, just a little blip on the corner. So we don't have a lot of infrastructure that's going to be in our borough during the operational period. We expect to be a substantial hub for construction during the several years, as Glenn Farn has talked about. And so we know there's going to be impact there. And we've had some discussions about what do those impacts look like. How can we mediate those construction impacts, the use impacts of our community? Where are going to the pipe lay down yards going to be? How are we going to house these, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 people that are going to come to town? How are we going to ensure there's public safety and adequate health care needs for them? How are we going to support the impacts on the infrastructure and roads that are going to be substantial when we've got hundreds of pipe trucks driving through our roads? Those are the things that we've been discussing and trying to put at the front of the discussion. You know, we as a borough, like I said, struggle with the cost of energy, of course. Not nearly as much as rural Alaska, but far more than our south central and neighbors to the south of us. And as I've talked at these conversations with AGDC, how do we incorporate the discussion of this Fairbanks spur line for us is the most important thing that we can talk about for our community. How do we make sure that that is compensated for and plugged into the overall tariff? Because if we get, you know, if it's an in-state route, what is going to be the price of gas for that? We don't know. And then on top of that, the North Star Borough customers are going to have to pay for the tariff for that spur line. It's about 30 miles, but it was estimated at $180 million 10 years ago. So what is that increase in cost at this point that the private sector is going to need to build outside of the Glen Farm project? Because if they're not going to build it, not going to put it into the overall scope of the project, that additional tariff on top of that is going to fall solely on the back of Fairbanks and North Pole ratepayers. And so making sure that is incorporated into this discussion has been a priority for us. We might end up seeing gas that, you know, is on par with what we're paying now. And like I said, it's not more gas that we need. It's more affordable gas. So where does the taxation of this process start? Has also been a discussion that we've talked about. And does it start once we are doing an export facility? Does it start at a floor of throughput through the gas line? Is it going to be just when it starts exporting, is it going to be at 1 BCF, which, in all honesty, we're never going to get to in in-state use alone. We certainly have a long way to go to get to there. So how do we lower that to understand where we can start taxing instead of just for in-state use, or is there a sunset date on in-state use for the phase one part of the pipeline? Those economic impacts that I was talking about before are also a big discussion. We don't necessarily know exactly what they're going to be like in our community. So as we've had these conversations with the AGDC, trying to get a feel for what the impacts are going to be on our community is something that is out of the scope and the capacity for, you know, a skeleton crew that we've got at the Fairbanks North Star Borough staff. We've got wonderful staff that can do a lot of work. We do not have the expertise on hand for me to walk down the hall and say, how much is it going to cost for our community on infrastructure? What is going to be the platting and planning impacts? What is going to be the housing impacts? So we are starting our Tiger Team, redirecting it. Many of you have been around long enough, you've heard of the Tiger Team. It's a committee that we've got of different stakeholders in our community that is famous for helping bring the F-35s fighter squadron to Fairbanks at the Eielson Air Force Base, protecting Eielson Air Force Base from the base realignment and closure process in the early 2000s, as well as ensuring that we are ready for military expansion in our community. And I'm going to be redirecting that conversation to how are we ready for the gas line? What does our community need to look for the real estate market, for the energy market, for housing, for healthcare, for labor, all these things? So I've got a very long list of invites that's going to be starting up in early March for those conversations. But that's not a fast process. So I can't know what those impacts are going to be right away. And as we have these discussions, you know, the hope for a piece of legislation that brings us all together is not something that can be rushed. I don't want to speak for other mayors and other municipalities, but as I balance how we support our community and try to get lower cost energy with ensuring that these costs and these impacts are going to be covered as well with property tax, I can't give up the next 30 years of some agreement without the information that I need to make a fully educated decision. And so as we support the gas line and we want to make sure that we're playing our part to move it forward and not being the obstacle, we also have to balance making sure our community is supported. You know, the way the 20 mil tax rate works is that by, you know, state statute, there's 20 mils of taxation. Whatever your community taxes of their mil rate is deducted from that 20 mils for oil and gas infrastructure. So in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the 20 mil tax rate for the oil and gas infrastructure, and then we tax at 10.6 mils. So everything above 10.6 mils to 20, so that 9.4 mils goes to the state for revenue. The other municipalities in along the route, some of them don't have property taxes, some of them have lower property taxes than us. One has higher, but the largest section of the line is in the unorganized borough, which is you know, between the North Slope and the northern bounds of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. All along that route, during the for the evaluation and the mill rate, the state would be getting that 20 mils. So, back in the napkin math, if not more than half, a very substantial portion of the overall mill rate impact is not going to the municipalities; it's going to the state. So we are not an obstacle in the economics of this project. We are a partner in trying to find where that balance is, but how we lower the annual cost is a bigger chunk going to the state than it is to the municipalities to pay the for the schools, for the healthcare costs, for the roads costs, for the services that we provide. And so I wanted to make sure that, you know, we were very clear that we are a partner in this project, but we are not anything more than a minor speed bump as a project of this size might go forward. So that's why we are standing together and making sure that we get a good deal for our residents, as well as making sure that the price of energy comes in low. But we're excited to keep having these conversations forward or moving forward. And if a agreement comes in the coming months between AGDC and the municipalities, you know, we know that the legislature can be knocked for moving slow sometimes, but I've also seen you move very quickly when there's a important piece of legislation on your desks, and you have the ability to move quickly. So if we're able to come to an agreement during session, and this time coming up, which I hope we can, then, you know, we'll come to you guys standing together and moving forward. And I hope that you can see that the municipalities will be there and take that word as something we can go to the bank with. But until that time, you know, and please don't run roughshod over us. But I think we understand that. You guys understand the impact this is going to have for us. So with that, I don't need other points, but it's been good conversations. We're looking forward to them continuing, but it's not an easy road to hoe, and we need to help make sure we're doing our due diligence as well.
Thank you, Mayor Hopkins. I've got a question or a comment from Representative Brox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Fairbanks is likely to be heavily impacted up front during the construction with people coming in, waiting to go out, et cetera, and also training. And have you been discussing the training needs and the immediate impacts with, I guess, AGDC? I don't know. Anybody?
We just recently had a conversation that they laid out. Glenn Farn actually put forward what the impact would be on the bed down, how many roads they'll need, where the how many yards they'll need, the trucks that they'll be moving through. And they said in the neighborhood of 1,500 to 1,800 workers, plus a few hundred operational staff, so 1,500 to 2,000 or so workers at a number of different camps. They didn't say which one specifically that would be. I would assume one of those would be in the interior area. So that's what we'd look at. In terms of training and where that workforce is coming from, no, we have not had that discussion yet, but at that Tiger team, we'll be bringing, we've invited the Alaska Pipeline Training Center and members of the Central Labor Council as well to attend to help us get a feel for what workforce needs are going to be.
Okay. Thank you.
I have Representative Dibert, then Representative Sadler. Co-Chair Dibert.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Freer. Thank you so much for sharing the story of Fairbanks. I really appreciate it. It sounds like cheaper, more affordable energy across the board. My question is, what steps can we take as a legislature that would ensure Fairbanks would be guaranteed more affordable gas than what we're receiving now with trucked gas to Fairbanks?
Thank you for that, Co-Chair Dibert. You know, we've been working for a long time to try to get the Fairbanks spur, the interior spur, included in the project, including in the tariff in some way to make sure that, you know, if the interior and the Fairbanks North Star Borough is going to be paying for the Fairbanks spur, we are not also paying for the Anchorage spur, everything south of Fairbanks. We need to make sure that that tariff and that cost is rolled in to the overall project. If it's a postage stamp, if it's a distance-sensitive rate, that is something that could be done by legislation here if you guys had wanted to. I know it's not going to be easy by any stretch, but that would be a strong way to be able to ensure that we have a more affordable natural gas when it comes to Fairbanks.
All right. I've got Representative Sadler, Fields, Mears, and Elam.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I got all the questions.
Well, yeah, I didn't know we were going to have the opportunity to ask questions as we go, so I appreciate it. I'll make it quick. There, I hear your concerns, Mr. Mayor, about the spur line. And in the 8-star presentation we've seen, they speak of their the Alaska Advantage or Alaska Principles. They nod towards the spur line, and they say that's an important thing for them to provide. Is that sufficient reassurance to you that this would be part of the overall tariff, or do you see that as just kind of a nod to you, something you'd like to work for, but they won't insist on? What's your faith in that principle as accommodating your community's needs?
You know, hope springs eternal, and we can always certainly hope that we'll be included. History has not been all that favorable when it comes to making sure that we are included in those discussions. So until I see pen to paper, I would not bet my home on it.
If I may follow up?
Follow up.
On a different kind of topic, and a question I would almost want to ask all the municipalities represented here. What it costs you're expending? Obviously, you're meeting with, you're talking with. What work are you doing, and how much is it costing you? And would you want to come back and try and get those costs addressed, reimbursed at the end deal?
At this day today, what costs are we putting
forward? I don't know if you
forward?
Calculate it, but just is it a significant cost for you?
Today, like these discussions?
To date.
So far, the discussions have only been a matter of my time and scheduling those meetings. So we have not hired contractors. We don't – if we're trying to get an answer on what we need in several months – you know, me putting forward an RFP is a several months process unto itself. So we don't have the time to be able to spend the money to understand what the overall impact to our community would be. We could pool all three municipalities together. That would slow that process down even more. So I have not expelled any dollars to this point in discussions.
Thank you, Mr. Burr.
Thank you. Representative Fields.
Thank you. Through the chair, I understand that there may be coordination with other localities beyond those represented here today through AML to look at the gas line. You know, one of my concerns is in a municipality like Anchorage, where we would not collect any property taxes since all of Glen Farm's subsidiaries are incorporated in ways other than a C-Corp, they would actually pay no taxes to provide public services. So one thing that I would ask the localities working together is to help us understand what costs you all will bear, recognizing different circumstances that might not include property taxes, so that we can try to protect the interests of local taxpayers. Because the construction jobs are great, but I don't want the cost of this project to fall entirely on my homeowners, who are paying for more police and fire, more schools, more roads, because there may be a logical state response, whether that's ensuring S-Corps above a certain income level pay taxes, or taking other steps to ensure that this project is economically beneficial for people who already live here. So I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but I would appreciate maximum unity and coordination going forward so we can protect the economic interests of our homeowners. Thank you.
Certainly, Representative Fields, through the chair. I agree, and with 2 miles of pipe going through our community, we'll be seeing some of those similar impacts. You know, looking back at the history of this project, it is not a thin binder by any stretch. And back in 2014, there was the MAG board, Municipal Alaska Gas Line Board. I can't remember exactly what the MAG board stood for, but it was a group of municipalities trying to answer these questions 12 years ago. And one of the things they put into place there also was a per capita PILT for communities not directly on the route to help Anchorage and rural communities as well make sure that some of their impacts were supported. That has not been the discussion topic on the table at this point. We briefly reviewed the MAG board, but that's certainly something that is out there and has been discussed in years past.
Thank you. I've got Representative Mears.
Thank you through the chair to Mayor Hopkins. I have lots of questions, but I'll just do one. I'm also in the boat, I think, with a lot of my colleagues about needing more information. One of the things that we started to get into yesterday in the Finance Subcommittee for Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development, of course, where AGDC falls, is the potential for the state of Alaska and other Alaskans to invest in the project. We went way over time and still didn't get through everything, but one of the final bullets was the scope of state investment program is under review and may be limited based on AGDC's current funding levels and evaluation of investment risk. So it's a ping for me, but also, like, I'm hoping that there's been some discussion about potential investment with the boroughs, because that is those are entities that have the opportunity for investment as well as the state. And as you're looking at impacts, if part of investment in the line as a piece of that has been part of your discussion.
Thank you, Representative Mears, through the chair. Happy to swing by your office after this when you're done on the floor. If you'd like, I can discuss further and answer more of those questions. In terms of an equity stake by municipalities, that has been something that's been briefly mentioned in our conversations. It's difficult to understand where a community like the Fairbanks North Star Borough would get a substantial enough amount of money to be able to buy into a $45 to $60 billion project. You know, we've got a few million dollars sitting in our general fund that we have to make sure is there for when the economy drops out and we're able to continue to maintain services and deal with a rainy day. I don't have hundreds of millions of dollars to be able to chip in to buy that equity stake. So in that conversation, how else can we partner with the builders? Has been small discussions. Can we get decent housing that's available to be built up to house the, you know, the thousands of workers that are going to come to the community, and then making sure it's decent housing that will last for decades to come, because I don't have 2,000 homes for 2,000 workers by any stretch. And so we've got a housing crunch as it is, and trying to put forward incentives there. So that's one thing that's been briefly discussed but have not had full-throated discussions. And so when we talk about these conversations are good and ongoing, they're not done. And so those are certainly conversations that we're there for creative ideas of supporting our community's needs and making sure they don't all fall on the backs of the current taxpayers, but help build the community. And then also, at the same time, grow the market in Fairbanks North Star Borough for more natural gas that would lower the overall cost and reduce the tariff cost.
Thank you. And finally, Representative Elam.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming out and talking with us. So help me understand a little bit. So you're looking to get the spur built out of this project for Fairbanks, which is like 30 miles of pipeline. I believe that's a separate project. How long do you need to finalize getting the rest of the permitting and all of the process to actually say what that project really looks like?
Representative Edelman, through the chair, that's not on the Fairbanks North Star Borough. We're not a utility that would have the ability or even an entity that could build it. So how can Glen Farm look at building that into their project as they're going forward? Would they be able to get it permitted? Where there's a will, there's often a way, especially with a very supportive Washington, D.C. administration at both the congressional and the White House level. So if you can move something quick enough that's just 30 miles long with a right-of-way that's already laid out and mapped, it's not permitted, there's not a right-of-way, but I can have my staff jump to make sure it's platted and planned at the municipal level, and if they're able to make that go, and we've got 3-4 years before the gas is turned on from today, I believe that you could make that happen in time to put those projects together and have the tariff included.
Follow up. My understanding, though, is that there will be an offtake in Fairbanks, and so then the folks in Fairbanks would still be able to have the opportunity to be able to get into the pipeline, and so. How long do you need to do all of this? It doesn't sound like you've got permits. It doesn't sound like you really have a plan, or do you?
Mr. Elam, through the chair, the Fairbanks North Star Borough does not have a plan. Like okay. I said, we are not an entity that is able legally to build a line. So there's some private sector joint ventures out there that are looking at doing this. It has not been finalized. It's not out there. I don't want to put their name out there and say what it is. The governor talked about it when he came to the Chamber of Commerce and presented on this as well. The concern, again, is going to be that that tariff is going to be borne, that $300 million, which is more than the entire cost of what we've borrowed for the infrastructure of the interior gas utility, would be borne on the Fairbanks North Star Borough ratepayers alone. And so that tariff for $300 million or $180 million, whatever you want to put it at, is going to be substantial when it comes to the delivery of price of gas at the home. So roping that tariff in, roping that project in, is important. Do I have a plan? No, because I can't incorporate that. If it's put on as well as the project is moving forward, then that there's a will, there's a way to make that happen. And that was something that has been the number one topic for our community in the interior for as long as this project's been going on.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mayor Hopkins, for being with us in resources today and sharing a little bit about the project. I also, did you want to?
Sure.
Okay. Co-Chair Diver?
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Freer. Thank you, Mayor Hopkins, for your presentation. And I would be remiss to not say that our Eielson Air Force Base would benefit also from natural gas. We have a Air Force Base in the community, along with homes. But I do want to just really quick, before the next speaker, give Fairbanks another shout-out. We have a former representative in the House, David Guttenberg, who served from 2003 to 2018 and is currently serving the Assembly.
Well, thank you for inviting me up. I didn't expect that. Let's see. So just to let you know, I started pipelining in 74, right? I started on clearing the right-of-way, building the road, and pipelining and working on Prudhoe Bay for 25 years. And I can tell you that this state and these communities are not prepared for the impact that's going to happen to our state when this construction project hopefully starts happening. Being on the Assembly now, the property tax issue is significant. This spur line is significant. And these things are building the basic infrastructure into the state for all these communities is something that's on your shoulders to do now. I mean, I tried when I was in. It's a continuing effort. But at the end of the day, the resources of the state of Alaska belong to the people. We need to make sure we take maximum advantage of it. So driving down the cost of all of energy, which hopefully this project would do for all of us, would be a significant economic opportunity for the future of this state. I can go on, but that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, next we'll hear from Mayor Peter Michicki of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Mayor Michicki, welcome to House Resources. Please come to the table or please join us up here.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for having us today. We really appreciate your interest. A little bit about the history of the Kenai Peninsula Borough and oil and gas, 4356 properties and Title 29 as well as the processing facilities that have existed are independent of 4356. So we have both phases in the Kenai Peninsula Borough, phase one, of course, being the pipeline, phase two being the LNG export terminal. This said, AKLNG impacts for the description, and I don't necessarily love the word impacts. It's like consequences. You don't ever say to your kid, clean your room, or we're going to give you really good consequences, right? There are very positive potential impacts to this project. We all know that. Alaska is starved for a reliable source of clean and fairly priced energy. That problem is exacerbated. I was here last year, I think, talking about that very issue. And appreciate you having us here today. So aside from those positive, very positive impacts, 13 years of out-migration is partially because of the cost of living. Cost of living is partially because of the price of energy. Henry Hub in Lower 48 is $3. Our natural gas isn't. Rural Alaska, far worse. So we need some solutions. This is part of the solutions. This is a complicated project. They've been talking about this project since I was in puberty. I'm 64 years old right now. I didn't have a very late puberty. It's been around for a long time. It is challenging. And we understand that we have to have discussions about every cost driver in the project in order for things to come to fruition, right? Everybody gets that. There are real impacts on our communities. We have road impacts, solid waste, hospitals, schools. We have responsibilities under the pipeline regs, federal regs 49 CFR Part 192, and the LNG regs Part 193 on partnerships with emergency responders, emergency services for their response plans. We will have real costs. But we see ourselves as partners. So in the history of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, statehood has a lot to do with the discovery of natural gas in Swanson River in 1957. We've had natural gas for a very long time in Soldotna. We celebrate Progress Days, which was since the day that we got natural gas and people were no longer hauling diesel and firewood for heating their homes. It's a big deal. And it's a huge advantage in commerce. In that 13 years of out-migration, if we want to see some really bright spots in commerce, low-cost supplies of natural gas are a necessity. A necessity. So we see ourselves as partners on the Kenai. We had the originally the refinery from Standard, and then Tesoro, which is now Marathon. Several names that ended up on the Nutrien plant, which is a fertilizer, urea, ammonia plant, Kenai LNG facility that I ran for many years. We understand the impacts of construction and the benefits of operation. We're excited about those things. We're very experienced in that area. I want to make it clear that we're excited and supportive of a successful AK LNG project. I also want to make it clear that municipalities do not have the capacity to serve as an obstacle on this project. We are all negotiating in good faith to make sure our costs are covered. So I am the mayor of the lowest mill rate for current 4356 property, just over 7 mills in the Kiski. No one has their hands out. No one's rubbing their hands together about serious revenue riches. We have to have our costs covered. And that's what the discussions are about today. So there's been a shift. I served here for a long time. And lots of new faces, and I really appreciate your sacrifice on being here. I know what that looks like. Because of the state of the state, a lot of costs have been shifted to municipalities. We're managing that. We're holding our own. But we do not have the ability to help subsidize a large project on the backs of our taxpayers. It's just not. There's no room. There's no room left. It's getting worse, not better. But that's okay. We're working through that. We're talking about different aspects, traditional mill levy, throughput options, pilt, that may not hit our valuation, that would impact our minimum and maximum school payments. We're talking about equity options. We're focused on covering our costs, and we need some time to even understand those costs. So even a community like the Kenai Peninsula Borough is very sophisticated in project life. Cost aspects have changed, and we need sometimes a tough time of year. That's okay. Project is working with us. I think we get there. Very different costs on phase one and two. There's only 51 miles of pipeline in phase one. And then the world changes in Nikiski, Alaska for phase two. It will be a substantial undertaking for our community. And we want to be partners. We don't want to do the ATCO thing in our community. We would like for that housing to be quality housing that becomes housing for new residents that are there for operating the facility and peripheral businesses that come about when there's a new facility. We're willing to be partners. We have lots of land. We can help with utilities and roads and things like that. Generally, when people are in quality housing, the interaction between a large temporary workforce and the community is a much more positive experience. Been involved with a lot of projects. Most of you know my former life for an oil and gas company. And I just learned a lot from those. I think we can do kind of a best case scenario for the phase two option. So there are four pieces of impact that we're asking the team to consider. There's construction. There is pre-floor volumes. If we agree to a PILT, there'll be a floor of throughput. We will still have impacts before reaching the floor. We must be able to cover our costs during the pre-floor volumes. Once there are volumes, that's a little bit more understandable of what that, if we agree to a throughput calculation, that's a little bit more understandable for us. And I would say to date that those discussions are going very well. I think the developer and AGDC is very interested in a date. There's a scheduling challenge. They are much more sensitive to the scheduling challenges than we are. I've had the experience when something important comes to the legislature, we can move it in a couple of weeks. When something is not perhaps ready for prime time, it could stall for a very long time. So we would like to get to the point of where we can link arms and help get something across the finish line, as opposed to being down here explaining why we don't support a certain approach. And I think we'll get there. When folks that don't have legislative experience, including some of their lobbyists, decide that this thing has to happen on this timeline, they may not understand how we really work down here and how quickly things can move when we feel like everyone's getting a, I don't know, what's the definition of a fair deal? Everyone's equally unhappy. We hope to come up with an agreement where we can link arms and be in here hoping to move something that makes sense for all of us. We're a little bit concerned about precedent, and that's a part of our discussions. Sometimes when you give concessions, that concession is the starting point for every future project, and those cost considerations could be different for every project and should not be considered an entry point. The traditional 20 mil level must stand even if and as we come to a deal with the development of AKLNG. So that is going to have to be a part of any agreement so that future developers don't believe that that is the new norm. That has withstood the test of time. Been lots of litigation, but it's the system we have. And I want to make sure that the rights of munis, again, who are holding their own in a very challenging time, does not make life impossible on providing the closest government to the front door, the things really that people really count on every day. We deliver, and we're managing it even in a very challenging environment. So that's something we're very sensitive to. So I'm try to be a man of few words. I'll see if you have any questions for me, and I, again, really appreciate you having us here today.
I saw Sadler first, then Prox. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Mayor, Mr. Senate President, Mr. Senator. Good to see you here, sir.
Thank you.
I think you're uniquely positioned among all the mayors here to understand and be an expert on what's going to be happening with this project locally and statewide. I understand that the municipalities are in conversation with talks, consultation, which is all kind of preliminary to negotiation. Can you characterize for me where you think characterize the negotiations or the conversations? Are offers being made? Is there information being shared broadly? Is there information that you would really like to have but don't have yet? I'm not at these meetings. We don't know, and don't divulge anything you shouldn't. But help me kind of understand the tenor and substance of the conversations.
Began with a disappointment on the scheduling. Got right down to business. They came back with a framework. They have been receptive to our suggested changes to the framework. They seem sensitive to things like potentially assisting with some capacity at our choosing of some folks. Some of the municipalities just don't have that kind of capacity where they can bring someone in that can help them understand their actual costs. I would say that they are very receptive and have adjusted their approach. I mean, everybody saw the news release on the 90% reduction in mill rates. That's not what we're hearing from the developer. They seem interested in striking a deal. I would say that at this point, everyone is negotiating in good faith. We have informed them several times that it's going to take more time and I think they're beginning to believe that. We're trying to guarantee them that the time is not a challenge to passage. It's February. It's mid-February. And you guys have lots of other things to do for another couple months. So we'll negotiate in good faith. And again, I find them to be receptive to our questions, considerations, and adjustments at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Prox.
Yes. Thank you, through the chair. Are you the them? Is that Glen Farne, or is it going through AGDC to talk to Glen Farne?
It is the developers in AGDC.
Together?
Yes.
Okay. And then, let's see. I guess I have some experience with the big rush in Valdez during construction. And at that time, it was a great big construction camp. Do you have any idea of how this is going to be put together? I'm thinking for Kenai in specific, that there's going to be a huge demand for construction and then considerably less, but still an added demand for housing, et cetera. Municipal expense. Are you thinking about that at this point?
Oh, every day.
Okay.
I'm calculating sort of a history from past experiences where two of our primary subdivisions were constructed during some of those major projects and are housing for those workers today, 50 years later. That is the end result I'd like to see. We're going to need it. Everybody, a lot of your communities are dealing with housing shortages. Ours is relaxed from what it was about 3 years ago, but it still exists. We're one of two growing communities in the state. I assume that will continue. It's not better than anywhere else. It's just better more often on the Kenai. But I think it's going to grow. And I just like the feel better. It was very successful back in the 60s and 70s when those were built. I've been to construction projects where it was literally a pipeline-style place where no one wants to be home. So it's just not as positive experience for the community, if you will. And I'm very focused on that. I think this can be a very positive thing that has long-term benefits that are far outside of the natural gas, or if the other plants are able to kick off because of the supply, like Nutrien. It's a very real hydrogen economy globally. Ammonia is a very important aspect of that. I think there are some real life things that can occur here, but we want it to be in a more organized, wholesome development that is a better experience for the community than not well-planned construction projects.
You have a big challenge with that. Follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Yes. No, I just forgot what it was. No, I didn't. Training. The Kenai has quite a few training facilities, petroleum-related. Is that still in operation, and have you thought about the need for training people that come up to work on this?
Yes, we have. I've been meeting with the university. Avtech is interested in branching off with some programs on our end of the peninsula. We're looking at how that can come together as a partnership with the university. A primary goal as Alaskans should be to have, if we see FID, is to hopefully get as many workers that are Alaskans as possible involved in the project. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to fill server positions in a restaurant in Alaska, and it will be a challenge to fill those positions. I get how that works, why we import folks for different skill sets. But we have to make an attempt to create careers for as many young Alaskans as possible. And a project like that is condensing decades of experience into 3 years of construction, right? I mean, that's an opportunity that shouldn't be missed for as many willing young men and women that want to be trained as possible. So I think we need to keep the pressure on, and we may have some requests if we move into FID, if the project moves into FID, on some minor supplements to facilitate that into a reality.
Thank you. Moving on, I've got Representative Mears, Representative Elam, then Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair. Mayor Machicki, very good to have you down again. I really appreciated your bringing some level and thoughtful insight to House Energy Committee last year. So I appreciate that you are dealing with different aspects of the project with the shorter term LNG import, the pipeline phase one, as well as phase two. I'm grateful to hear that phase two is part of the conversations that you're having. And I was hoping that you'd be able to talk a little bit more about, are you talking about the import phase one and phase two in isolation of being able to have different scenarios depending on where you are in the in our natural gas energy seeking?
Yes, I wouldn't say phase one and phase two are combined in the discussions. We're largely focused on phase one. I mean, that's the immediate philosophy due to the fact that that FID would be earlier and hopefully a phase two would be immediately following because we know the challenges of a standalone phase one, right? I think ultimately, I think what happens is that we come to a system-wide agreement that also has some individual negotiations because our communities, I mean, I love that map in here. It's just kind of demonstrates the diversity from the breadbasket of the north to the value-added communities in the south. I mean, we're all so different. And I think there'll be individual pieces that you've heard some of the requests from other communities. I think there has to be a piece of these negotiations that is community-specific. I have the benefit of being on all sides of this table, and I understand the developer's perspective. I understand the community's perspective, and I understand the state's perspective for sitting down here with you all for so many years. And it's challenging. And if you can get folks to stop focusing on only their perspective and recognize that this can be a very successful partnership, I think we get there. And I think we get there. And I will stop by. My life's been a whirlwind, but I do appreciate your invite, and I will stop by and say hello.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Representative Elam.
Thank you. I would have to agree. The Kenai is a great place to call home. And so thanks for coming down. You know, as we've had conversations, there's definitely been a significant pace to the conversations. And I appreciate where that's all at. But the Kenai Peninsula in particular are going to have some significant impacts, both on the west side and on the east side. Have you guys had any conversations around potential impacts over on the Seward side, where they're looking at potentially doing some of that steel import and a variety of things there? And then also the other question I would have is, as you've been going through negotiations and having these conversations with Glenfarne and AGDC, the term you were using earlier of partnership, I really like that term. Does it feel like a partnership, or does it feel like, you know, what kind of conversations are you having?
Well, I think you know me pretty well.
Yes, sir.
And I will not use the word partnership. If it's not a partnership, I'll use a different word. At this point, I believe that we reach a successful partnership. We're excited from Seward to Beluga, which is where phase one will terminate. We are excited about the potential. We only remain excited if it doesn't feel like a partnership, but it results in a quantifiable partnership. And when all three of these groups get together and put themselves in the shoes of the others, we'll get there. And I think we're starting to see that kind of movement, so I'm very hopeful.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the second bite of the apple. Through the chair, Mr. Mayor Machicki, you know, we have representatives from three different important municipalities here today. What is the state doing right? What are these other communities doing right that we should maybe all the different municipalities should model their behavior on? Are you working together with them? Is there anything one borough is doing that the rest can learn from and apply?
Oh, I think that's the case in every aspect of life. I've been pushing education to fund the best of the best, being mentors to folks that are struggling. There's no doubt. I mean, we all have our strong points, and we have some areas where we can learn from others. And I know the four of us are doing so. Actually, the five of us. If you look at the pathway, we've been meeting with the North Slope, Denali, Fairbanks, North Star, Mat-Su, Kenai Peninsula Borough. And we all do things well and all can learn from the others. I think it's important that we remain united on our third of the table, if you will, as we understand the perspectives of the other. I have very little impact from phase one in the Kenai Peninsula Borough. I hear what Representative Elam is saying, but then it transforms into an enormous amount of positive and difficult but manageable impacts in phase two. Phase two will be in the middle of a community that we already have highway issues. You're going to be moving a lot of materials. You're going to be moving some materials on the highway. I imagine there'll be probably what we've done in the past for the other major facilities that were constructed was a temporary gravel causeway for landings for large componentry so that there isn't the highway impact. But all of that needs to be put together in the plan. And we're experienced. I mean, a lot of the folks that built those facilities are still around. We certainly have the records for the things that had to be done in order for that to be successful. And I think we have a great model.
Follow up?
Thank you. Follow up. This is an old reporter question. I like to focus on the good and how we can make this thing happen and the benefits. But on the other side of the coin, what could the state, what could municipalities, what's the worst thing that could happen for this project? What should we avoid? What should we be cautious of?
We should be cautious of moving backward. And that's something that we're all flying that flag every day. Moving backward.
Yeah.
Is where your costs aren't covered and you exacerbate not only the shift of costs from the state to the municipalities, but suddenly you take on an amount of cost that you didn't have the capacity to understand prior to it occurring. So that's hence the time in negotiations. The less experienced municipalities really need to understand that impact and make sure that it's covered. I mean, that's just the very basis. So there's a reason why there's pilt on a highway or something else. And if you don't live on the highway, you don't receive the pilt because there are direct impacts, maybe not living on, but just thinking of the different areas that receive a federal highway grant pilt. There are direct impacts. There are direct impacts to this. There are direct costs associated with this project. And the worst thing that can happen is municipalities not recognizing a substantial pool of cost and waking up one day and realizing you've agreed to something that's going to last for your kids and grandkids to live through and complicate the lives of folks that I think are taxed enough as it is.
Thank you, sir.
We have a very low, relatively low mill rate. That's for a reason. Cost of living is expensive. We have, I'll translate it to school funding. I'm sorry to just go to that, but the BSA adjustment was great. We're missing 3,500 kids. The Kenai Peninsula is growing with people over 65, and we're losing 2 to 17-year-olds. Oh, and they're taking their parents with them at an unprecedented, and that's throughout Alaska. So we have to put ourselves in the shoes of the taxpayer and do what we can to have government cause as little negative impact to them financially so that they can at least compare life here with life somewhere else and keep those families here in Alaska.
Thank you. Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. Thank you, Mayor, for being here. It's good to see you.
You too.
So I heard from all three of you about the time pressure, or that there seems to be one set of shoes is saying it needs to happen quickly, these agreements, because we need to act on it during session. But it does sound like you guys would really need some time before that happens. Yes, we can move fast when we need to, but my understanding was there is no FID until this happened, till the agreement happened. Is that what you're hearing, or am I hearing differently?
I don't know that I've heard that directly. I think it's implied. Okay. Frankly, it doesn't matter to me, because I think we can make a timeline by the end of session through continued good faith, putting yourself in others' shoes. I think there's a lot of people hire lobbyists. A lot of lobbyists get nervous and really maybe don't sit down and take the time about big pieces we've moved in a really short period of time. And big pieces move quickly. This isn't a big piece, in my view. But big pieces move quickly when folks are aligned. Mm-hmm. Little pieces don't move at all when they're not. Right. So time, giving us the time to understand impacts and making sure those costs are covered are to the project's benefit, mm-hmm. if they hope to get something across the finish line this year. And I think that's very doable with sometime. I hate to give a timeline, but plenty of time for the end of session, in my view.
Okay. Can I have one more question?
Yes.
So something unrelated is, are you concerned that, at least through phase one, that the gas price would not go down? Do you see a bump in price once the pipeline comes down, and that the price for your community wouldn't go down until phase two happens?
I think phase two is, I've said this to the developers. I was disappointed when the phases were divided. Some people might believe that the project was too big and they had to divide it for forward motion. I'm concerned if there's not a phase two that the benefits are challenging. Mm-hmm. So I'm certainly encouraging integrating those phases, if not immediately, as closely as possible. Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there any further questions for Mayor Machicki? Seeing and hearing none, I want to give the Denali Borough Mayor an opportunity to join us at the table as well. So, Mayor Chris Knoll, welcome to House Resources.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for this opportunity to last minute to join you here. For the record, my name is Chris Knoll. I serve as mayor of the Denali Borough. And I'll just start by, I just want to acknowledge my my fellow mayors behind me. I'm really thankful to be joining them and their experience both in this building and then representing their communities, and feel much more comfortable being a part of the process thanks to that experience. I hope you'll bear with me as I read some written testimony here. As my fellow mayors have shared, the AKLNG project promises to dramatically change the way we think about energy in the interior. I'll take a minute to share some of the impacts a project of this size will have on our community, the Denali Borough, which is going to experience this in some ways, similar ways to our to the other municipalities who have spoken, and in other ways very differently. Based on current cost estimates, our portion of the pipeline, 87 miles, would travel through the Denali Borough, and the current cost estimate for that would be $1.5 billion. The Denali Borough is a limited local government providing key services to our residents and visitors. We have 7 full-time administrative staff, and then our solid waste department team is comprised of 3 full-time, and 4 part-time employees. One of the first impacts of this project, and one that we have started very preliminarily, would be shepherding the project through our code-required planning and platting responsibilities. While the route has long been identified and is incorporated on many of our existing planning documents, we have three important processes that we need to complete, including a conditional use permit, pipeline easement, and land lease agreements for things like pipe laydown yards or camps, things like that. A project of this size will add congestion to our roads, bridges, and the Alaska Railroad, particularly during the busy summer tourism season. And of high concern for us are impacts to local roads that are not state maintained, as these impacts fall directly to the borough. And again, road maintenance is something we're just now providing very small levels of supplemental funding to neighborhood organizations to help improve these roads, the public platted public roads. The increase in construction traffic, in addition to the project itself, brings the risk of an increased need for emergency services. In the Denali Borough, fire protection and EMS response are provided by local nonprofit organizations through a combination of paid medical responders and volunteer firefighters with financial support from the borough. And my understanding is the project will provide its own medical and security support. Excuse me. And yet our local first responders must be ready to jump in and assist. We have concerns about mitigating the disruption this project would cause as it passes through the Nanana River Canyon and the Denali National Park entrance area. There's a high density for the, as most know, high density of hotels and seasonal businesses, and we will want to ensure that the impacts are concentrated during the winter season. Finally, an overarching goal all of our municipalities share, and my fellow mayors have touched on this, is to translate these short-term construction dollars into long-term economic gain, and not simply with the prospect of new and, importantly, cheaper energy.
Thank you.
We need help to translate those near-term project staffing needs into workforce training and reskilling opportunities. We'd like to parlay short-term housing needs into long-term housing solutions for our communities. And we need to boost local healthcare capacity to meet the project demands and provide this essential service to our residents. One other piece, we need time, as the other mayors have said, to fully understand the project and the impacts, build understanding with our governing body, our assembly, and provide eventual authorization by that body. And I'd just take a moment to acknowledge my fellow assembly members, my colleagues here in the audience today, assembly members Zappone, Alexander, and Warner. In closing, the AKLNG project would transform energy infrastructure along the rail belt, and we stand ready to support the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Knoll. Are there any questions or comments for Mayor Knoll? Okay. Well, seeing none, thank you so much for joining us last minute.
Thank you.
We're on a little bit of a time crunch. Grateful that Speaker Edgman allowed us to, held the House floor on recess so that we can have this meeting and meet with the mayors that are here in town with us. But that completes the agenda for House Resources Committee meeting today. Our next House Resources Committee meeting is Friday, February 20, 2026, where we will hold confirmation hearings on appointees to the Big Game Commercial Services Board. The time now is 2:22 p.m., and this hearing of the House Resources Committee is now adjourned.